Mind the Alex Breakdown is brought to you by Mudwater.
You're probably wondering how Jonathan stays so peppy all day. Well, he's addicted to caffeine. I quit caffeine during quarantine, and I'm feeling very self-righteous about it. Jonathan did not, however. Enter Mudwater into our life. It's a coffee alternative. It has four adaptogenic mushrooms and Ayurvedic herbs, and that's what makes it.
It has only 1/7 the caffeine as a cup of coffee, but honestly, it makes me feel amazing. I don't have any of the jitters. I don't have any of those caffeine cravings. It just keeps me nice and level all day long, and I don't crash, which makes my lose her mind when I get that, like, I need that cup of coffee to keep my brain going. She loses it.
No, but this is what he does. I don't know why I feel so crummy. Because you're addicted to caffeine. That's why. Every ingredient in Mudwater was added for a reason. Cacao and chai are put in there for mood, to boost his mood. There's a microdose of caffeine, just a little bit. Also lion's mane for alertness. Cordyceps for helping support physical performance. Oh yeah.
I sit in this chair all day long.
You need better physical performance. There's also chaga and reishi that support your immune system and turmeric for inflammation. Don't forget cinnamon for the antioxidant properties.
It's everything I love and nothing that M doesn't. I was seriously feeling like a slave to coffee, and this was the motivation to make a switch that I needed. And also, it is delicious. I keep saying it. It tastes so good.
It's 100% USDA organic, because I know someone was like, but is it organic? Yes, it's organic. Non-GMO, gluten-free, vegan, Whole30. And for those of you out there who are curious, yes, it's kosher.
Which is important, but also, it doesn't have any gluten.
Visit mudwater.com/breakdown to support the show and use the code BREAKDOWN at checkout for $5 off. Mudwater. Sometimes when you sit with me, I remember, like, my gums start feeling weird, or I'll get like an essence of a color, or like I'll feel really nauseous. Like, yeah. What are you doing, woman?
I'm holding space for your body to speak its language to you.
Why? It's, how do you make it do that?
It's a somatic language. It's the language of see, hear, smell, touch, taste.
Hi, I'm Mayim Bialik, and welcome to my breakdown. This is where we break down the things that make us break down.
It's Mayim Bialik's breakdown. She's going to break it down for you, because you know she knows a thing or two. And now she's going to break down. It's a breakdown. She's going to break it down.
Today we're going to break down, I guess it's kind of, we're breaking down East meets West.
LA and New York battling?
No.
That's not what we're doing.
No, different East meets
West. I got the wrong memo.
We're going to be speaking with someone who is a practitioner of many Eastern things, as it were, holistic things and
modalities.
She also is a licensed midwife and owns and runs a birthing center here in Los Angeles.
Babies keep needing to be born.
Yeah, they do. Her name's Elizabeth Bochner, and she was my doula for my second child's birth, which happened in the next room. Before we start talking about what we're going to be talking about with Elizabeth, let's say hello to Jonathan, but we don't talk about that Cohen.
Hello, Mayim.
In our trailer, that's your funniest line.
It's my only line.
You dropped the fact that your family might be related to Leonard Cohen, but we don't talk about it.
Correct.
Jonathan, would you like to tell us a few things about this podcast?
People might need to know a few key words before we get started. So I thought for the word of the day, you might describe to us or explain what she means in this context by the nervous system.
Word of the day.
The nervous system, there's a central nervous system and there's a peripheral nervous system. And the central nervous system is the brain and spinal cord. So like the brain, and then it attaches, it's all connected, to a spinal cord that runs literally through your vertebral column. And that spinal cord has all these special nerves and ways to communicate to your body. So the central nervous system is the brain and the spinal cord, but the peripheral nervous system is everything that comes off of that spinal cord, which goes to the periphery. So for example, if you move your hand, it's the premotor cortex and the motor cortex sending a signal down from the central nervous system to the peripheral nervous system. And the peripheral nervous system is also responsible for how you feel things in your organs and really your whole body. But what we talk about with Elizabeth is the emotional nervous system, which means the way that our emotional experience impacts the nervous system. This is something that scientists like me love to say. There's really no such thing as emotions as a free-floating, you know, concept separate from science. Everything you feel because of a shift in chemicals and then a conscious experience to process those chemicals as what you perceive them as. Yes, those are highly subjective, but really, for the most part, they're not. We know that there are certain happy chemicals and there are certain more depressive chemicals. This is a super simplification, very simplified. The emotional nervous system then is talking about the interaction between the systems of your body that are generally governed by the nervous system and how they are impacted by our emotional experience. And everyone's emotional experience is going to be different for different reasons and different things. Someone who's experienced trauma views the world very differently from someone who hasn't. People who have been traumatized in war, for example, will experience an entirely different existence when they come home many times. And that's actually a very strong example, you know, in trauma of an impact on the emotional nervous system. So, yeah, that's kind of the concept of the day.
Word of the day has really turned into concept of the day.
I'd like to welcome Elizabeth on. And first, I'll just say a couple things about her. As I mentioned, she's a midwife. She's an educator, she's a speaker, and she's the owner and director of the Graceful Clinic here in Los Angeles, California. For over a decade, she's combined her medical board licenses as a midwife and also an acupuncturist with a diverse body of skills in pre- and perinatal psychology to educate and inspire women to understand their bodies and the birth experience. She has a degree in child psychology from Tufts. She's been celebrated in some press. I actually didn't know that. Not because of my relationship with her. I think she might have famous clients. They're kind of roaming about in Los Angeles. They're everywhere with their big pregnant bellies looking for enlightenment. Anyway, Elizabeth is also a skilled writer. She's a really, really, she's a lovely, lovely person. Let's welcome Elizabeth.
Break it down.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for being with us today. You're someone, obviously, who's been a really kind of a pivotal person in my life, you know, not only in, you know, assisting literally with the birth of my second child, but, you know, also you've kind of been one of the windows I've had into really understanding healing and the kind of larger impact of, you know, an experience with something that we can't always explain or quantify the way we can other things. So,
right.
Really, really grateful for you to be here. Your bio it's impressive, as are you. I first met you as a doula when you were at that time already studying to become a midwife, correct?
Right. And I don't know if you remember this, but it came to me in a very unusual way.
Oh, tell that story.
So I'm 35 years old, kind of minding my own business and being like, my plan for my life is to get married and have kids, you know. And I kept having these dreams. I was already an acupuncturist then. And I kept having dreams. And in the dreams, I'd put my hands out and babies would fall into them. And I'd look up and go, I don't know what to do. And, you know, I'm from the East Coast. I'm 52, like not in my wheelhouse to birth babies outside of the hospital, right? Nothing I even thought about, nothing I went to school about. And it had been told to me by Anna Verwal, who's in the business of being born, some people might know that, that I had received the calling to become a midwife. And I'm like, you're out of your mind. I didn't have a spiritual path. I was like, no, 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 no. You go to the doctor, you get drugs. You go to the white male doctor, you get drugs, you go to the hospital, and then they wash your baby, clean it up, and you live happily ever after, because I was also living in a fantasy world. But yes, it had come to me through dreams. And I like to say that receiving the calling to become a midwife was the singular greatest thing to happen to me, because it helped me grow up into an adult and it opened my eyes into a way of thinking of how amazing that anatomical female body is, you know, when you listen deeply. And it opened that doorway up for me.
What was your path to acupuncture? How long had you been an acupuncturist at that time?
At that time, it was I think 1998 when I started school. And when we met, I was probably about 3-ish years licensed. But Mayim, you're going to give me way too much credit. I literally stumbled into that also. My personal life story is I did everything society taught me to do. You know, I went to the right college. I was, you know, having the right career. I was kind of married to the right guy and living in Europe, and I just wasn't happy. Like, nothing was landing inside of me. And that was the first time I started to explore the somatic realm or the intuitive realm. And in that process, it was literally somebody told me, I was living in London at the time, and they're like, you're going to go move to California, and you think you're going there for one reason, you're going to be there for another. And it's got to be about a school with healing. And I was like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And that's how I kind of stumbled into acupuncture. I actually signed up for school never having acupuncture myself, because I just knew that's where I was supposed to go. And again, when you had met me, because I was an acupuncturist, it had started to deprogram how I was thinking. And I was coming out of this like nail hammer way of thinking. Mm-hmm. That's not how you think as an acupuncturist. You think and you think about the whole person. You're looking at the mental, the emotional, the physical, the spiritual. You're looking at the organs and how they interrelate. It started the process for me of seeing and hearing somebody, mm-hmm. and being in relationship with that.
What does that knowing feel like? Like when you say that you knew you were supposed to do that, like what mm-hmm. is it a place in your body?
Okay. It took me a long time to figure it out, because at the beginning, the knowing for me, I like to say, was just dumb luck. It was kind of like, I don't know, nothing else is working. I guess I'll do that. And as I have gotten older and started to learn to listen to it, it's actually a felt sense inside of me. And I've actually learned that there's a language for this, and it's called somatic work. And I've done enough of that work now so that I can actually identify what it feels like, its movement, its color, its shape. And what happens for me is that I get, it's a settling feeling. And I don't think enough people talk about the felt sense of intuition. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was going through this process, you know, for how many, like 20-ish years, it was always like, I'm looking for a voice to tell me, right? Which never happened. It's more of this inner sensation. And it was like, oh, I could take a breath. It created spaciousness. Mm-hmm. And I felt connected to something bigger than myself that started on the inside and then moved all around me.
When I met you, you were a doula. Mm-hmm. And you're now a midwife.
Correct.
And your degree is in child psych, correct?
Yes, from Tufts University. Child psychology.
You know, for people who don't know what a doula is, you know, a doula is, you know, the simplest definition is it like it's a labor coach. But what you actually, you know, were and are for me and Fred forever was, you know, you were the bridge between him existing inside of my body, you know, and him existing outside of my body. And
beautifully said.
Yeah. And that involved us preparing together and, you know, processing after.
The beautiful thing that you just said is preparing together. I don't mm-hmm. think there's enough emphasis on the relationship transitioning from inside the body out into the world. It's not right. just a single one person, one thing. It's a relationship. So well said.
Thank you. I mean, you probably taught me to say that. just as Fred was born, your world was rocked in a very mm-hmm. specific, life-changing way.
Yes, absolutely.
Tell us what happened.
So here I was, you know, I was a licensed acupuncturist. I was like, I know about nutrition. I know about complementary alternative health. And I know about clean eating and clean body. And, you know, I'm the only one in my family who's going to therapy. And I have like, you know, I'm exploring this spiritual thing and that spiritual. I was like, I thought I had it all going on. And I was like, I've listened to the calling. I am now I'm going to be a licensed midwife, right? And I was like, I'm going to be of service. And then, as I like to say, I got handed my PhD thesis. And I was the first person in the history of my family on both sides to ever be diagnosed with any kind of cancer. And it was really humbling because I literally thought at that time that if you eat well, if you exercise, if you do the mental emotional work, you know where your anger is, if you got anger, you're gonna be able to, you know, go scot-free through life. And that wasn't what happened. And, you know, as I like to say, I was handed that PhD thesis and I journeyed through breast cancer. I'm very specific about that. It was very clear to me. I started a bit of a meditation practice, and I went into a deep meditation. I believe I went into the Akashic Records, which is what they say is where the story of your life is. And I was all excited. I'm like, oh my God, the Akashic Records is going to tell me what to do. And I'm going to figure this, like, I'm going to be in charge, right? I'm going to figure this out. I open up the book and it's blank. And I'm like going to my guides. I'm like, you guys, there's nothing in here. And they're like, Elizabeth, it doesn't matter. Like, do you want to go through cancer now? Do you want to go through it when you're 60? Like, you're going to have this experience of whatever this is. When do you want to do it? And I was like, well, I just turned 40. I might as well do it now before, you know, when I got great resources and people around me and I know stuff. I don't want to be too old. That was, you know, literally the thought process. And I was like, and the funny part was, I like when I got diagnosed in August, it was like, oh, I don't have any clients in September, October, really. Like, what am I going to do? Maybe I'm going to hang out with my sister and see her and the kids, my nephews. And then it was like, oh, I guess I'm going to be busy mm-hmm. with going through this journey.
That kind of diagnosis, that kind of information, that kind of flood of here are the things you have to do and here are the appointments you have to make and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's very anxiety provoking and it can be terrifying. But can you talk a little bit about sort of at that time, you know, for people who may not know what a spiritual experience is or what that means, what mm-hmm. were you drawing on?
So I was really fortunate. I have an extensive background in pre and perinatal psychology, and I just done a full training with Ray Castellino up in the Santa Barbara, Ojai area in pre and perinatal psychology. And that somatic work. And what I was drawing upon was the skills of being able to name what was going on for me. When I had the diagnosis, I had been in a place in my life where I stopped, like, kind of judging things as good or bad. I was still thinking I was in control, but it was more like something Ray always taught was like, oh, well, that's information. You know, as opposed to going, what's wrong with you? You're so angry. It's like, oh, I'm getting angry here. All right, well, that's information. And also something that Ray taught that was so helpful was learning how to be my adult self. So understanding that there are different ages within all of us, and if we can understand trauma and how that works, and by the way, I believe we all have trauma. Sometimes it's called trauma with a big T, sometimes trauma with a little T is how we talk about it these days. But, you know, everyone has different experiences and how it lands in the nervous system and in the brain. And so what I had spent most of my life doing before I'd met Ray is these younger ages that were traumatized and it was stuck in the nervous system. Those younger ages had created a survival skill and a way of looking and seeing things. Because of the work I had done with Ray Castellino and the training, all of a sudden I had the skills to be able to go, oh, that's my 13-year-old self right now, who's really nervous and really scared. Because, okay, my adult self, oh, my adult self knows what healthy support looks like. Mm. My adult self knows how to ask for healthy support. And my adult self knows how to make boundaries with things it perceives are not healthy. And I had also learned the power of a pause. Yeah, I mean, I get excited, so I speak a lot, but it's like all of a sudden it was like, oh, I learned how to kind of settle, find that space, connect, and make a decision from the place of spaciousness, of a pause, and for me, connect it to something bigger than myself. And that's just really important. So I'm learning these adult skills. And I think having the adult skills is the reason why I'm here today. I'm giving that credit. You know, my adult chose chemotherapy. My adult chose a double mastectomy. My adult chose radiation. Chemo, the double mastectomy, the radiation, that did not save my life. My adult chose those things to support the journey through this and what I needed to learn, along with choosing, you know, other things, acupuncture, nutrition, herbal supplements. Those are all things that I chose.
Stupid question.
Oh, there are no stupid questions. You know
can,
that.
Can you do acupuncture to yourself?
Oh, yeah, you can. But you can, but you know what? It's not as effective. I really think there's something important with almost any healing modality of being in relationship with another person and kind of having a witness. I think it's important.
What did you do nutrition-wise? And obviously, this is not an endorsement for any particular nutrition, but I'm curious what you did.
Yeah. You know, it was really interesting because back then, this is in 2008, I had read about some studies online. And I'd done a lot of cleanses and fasting by then. And I'd read a study online that said to fast 2 days before the chemotherapy because all the healthy cells in the body will kind of be like, oh, we're fasting. And like, cover themselves up and protect themselves. Mm-hmm. And then the cancer cells aren't protected. And so it's almost like the chemo will go there. The healthy cells protect themselves. Now, when I had done this back in 2008, my doctor was a little like, Elizabeth, you can't be doing that. You need nutrition. You can't, like all that stuff. You know, fast forward to 2020, they actually recommend it.
Right. This wasn't like you read this in, you know, Elf Tree Unicorn Journal that like cells will hide themselves. Like there was actual research that was indicating a protective mechanism when cells are fasting. Got it.
Correct. And this is from France. And again, 2020, we know so much about fasting and intermittent fasting and how helpful that is for cell rejuvenation. Right. So this is all science. Back then, everyone was like, that's not science. I mean, Maya, remember back then, everyone's like, neuroscience.
Oh, everybody was like, well, everybody was like, home birth and breastfeeding. Right? What are you, living in the dark ages?
Oh my God, right? But now it's like we know the science behind it.
Right.
And we know the science about the brain. Back then, everyone's like, oh, that woo-woo stuff. And it's like, now it's like, no, that's the hippocampus. That's the frontal lobe.
Right. Well, and this is also, you know, a large part of Jonathan and my motivation also for wanting to do this podcast is there is science to acupuncture.
Yep.
While people don't always understand the intricacies and kind of complexity of energy work, there also is science to energy work. I mean, even yoga, right? This is not just something trendy that people, you know, should do to stay skinny. Like there's an actual science to the many, many branches of yoga, poses of which are actually only one branch. But back to sort of the things you did. So you said acupuncture, nutrition. What was the other thing?
And nutrition, like there were things like I was craving apples. Like I couldn't get enough apples into my body right after chemo. And then you'd look and it'd be like, oh, the pectin is like really good for what's going on in my body. So you just start listening to the cravings.
What were the supplements? That's what you said, supplements. So I guess I'm curious, is that something you did kind of on your own? Did you have an Eastern practitioner? Obviously you have, I know you have a lot of training and experience in a lot of different realms. Is Chinese medicine one of those? You know, is that the supplements you took? What did you do?
Yeah. So first of all, it was all about hydration. Now you got to remember back in the day in 2008, if you wanted coconut water, you had to buy the coconut and buy a cleaver. That's what we were doing. Right? Back in the day, I wanted hydration. It was like, okay, so chemo is like fire in the body. It's like poisoning my body. So coconut water for hydration. And then I wanted IV fluids. But back in the day, there was no IVs come to the house. So I got all of my, you know, midwife friends to come over and give me IVs. There was that going on. The herbal supplements, a lot of Chinese herbal formulas. And what was interesting is my doctors are just really honest. And they were like, listen, Elizabeth, we don't know anything about the Chinese herbal formulas. So I worked with friends who were really great herbalists. And there's actually formulas out there specific for chemo. There's formulas out there specific for going through the radiation, you know, and Chinese medicine looks at things differently. Again, it's not that nail and hammer. It's more the whole person. What was going on in my body? Oh, my body was hot with toxins, like literally. I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, a lot of college was spent like hungover, like poisoning myself with alcohol.
I wasn't a drinker, but I was hungover from studying so hard.
Well, so for me, it was like, it felt similar because it was like, oh, I'm poisoning my own body to heal itself, which is another odd concept. So it's like, what is cooling? What is nourishing? And so I was doing specific formulas from specific companies to work with what stage I was in the Western medicine stages. Mm-hmm. You know, another thing for me, and I'm just going to say it, I could not wait to poop after the chemo. Like, my body was so hot and dry. And we know this in Chinese medicine. Chinese medicine, we look at the poops all the time. But it was just like, oh my God, like, I'm so constipated from all of those medicines. Mm-hmm. It was like, when am I going to poop? As soon as I had that first poop, I was like, great, I'm on the other side of this. Mm. You know, so it was taking lots of things to help move that through my body so that would happen also.
Mm-hmm. Here's a difficult question, but okay. I feel like one of the special things about you is there are no difficult questions, because not that you have the answer to everything, but you seem to always receive, you know, my questions the way that I intend them. And so I know mm-hmm. that, yeah, I trust that I can ask you this. Do you think everyone can heal the way you healed? Like, if everyone were to do what Elizabeth did, did you figure it out?
Yes and no. What I figured out was how to navigate this as a human being with real feelings. And I can't say this enough, learning what healthy support looks like and owning that and being in relationship with it. That is what I think everybody can do. Now, what it looks like on the outside is going to be different for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, some people resonate with herbs. Some people don't. Some it's homeopathy. I think on a very physical, literal level, and they figured this out, chemo and hydration are so important. Like, mm-hmm. get hydrated. But I think that if someone was to be able to look at it as an adult and then allow for the temper tantrums of the younger one who is just so upset that she's even going through this, I think it's an easier navigation. Mm. So yeah, I think with some really good mental, emotional support through it, yes. And as I'm speaking to you this, what I'm starting to understand is I had the capacity to see and hear myself. I had the capacity to have people around me who could see and hear me. And I think that's part of the key.
For people who don't know what is that?
Well, on an esoteric level, I really think that's what love is all about, seeing and hearing another and seeing and hearing yourself. It's an action of love. And I think it's listening, it's acceptance of your own unique being. There's no cookie cutter one way of navigating through cancer or navigating through COVID or navigating whatever, or childbirth, or whatever life gives you. But if you have the ability to express yourself without shame and with some acceptance, or find somebody who can accept that for you, I think you're able to listen to what goes on better on the inside. I mean, and sometimes it was, you know, I was going through chemo and I wanted to be fully conscious. And they were like, no, you're going to have that Benadryl. And I'm like, shut it off. Like, can you hear me? Shut it off, because I am losing presence and I want to be present. Like, I had a moment and I had a support person with me helping advocate for me. And they were like, can't you hear her? She said no.
Yeah.
You know? That was like the first round of chemo. I think by the sixth round, I was like, okay, I'm going to take that now because I need that. Mm-hmm. Like, now I'm like, that's what I need for support. Mm-hmm. You know, so I had an understanding of my body and I wanted to be as present as I could to feel everything.
I went with a friend to a chemo treatment and, you know, it was a very lovely facility, you know, as they go. And it was very... it was very calm, and like the nurses were really nice. It always makes me really happy when you go to the chemo hallway and everybody's mm-hmm. nice. Like, they should be, right? Like, everyone should be nice there.
Correct.
And they were. Nice. And, you know, even despite that, it's a very, very high energy environment, because mm-hmm. it really does feel like the stakes are so high, you know, even for a single treatment. Like, it's very stressful. And I guess I'm wondering, what did it look like to manage that? Like, what was the support you sought for that level, that fear, you know, and sort of the heightened sense of presence that you have to have? What did that support look like? Was that energy work? Was that, like, what was it?
Doulas. I mean, I was a doula. I had a great mm-hmm. community of doulas. I had two amazing doulas that came with me during and then afterwards, you know, Sufi Erter and Anna Paula Markel. Mm-hmm. Anna Paula Markel opened up her home and I literally lived with her for mm-hmm. each week after chemo because I'm a single woman. Single woman living by myself. So I had doulas doulaing me. And then, you know, a midwife that you and I both know and love, Catherine Williams. Mm-hmm. Catherine Williams said to me right at the beginning, she is like, Elizabeth, you need to go through cancer as a woman and not a midwife doula. Mm. Right. And again, part of that is learning to take off the different hats that I wear. You know, I wasn't an expert. I didn't know what was going on. It was like, okay, I'm 40 years old. I'm single. I will probably at the end of this be menopausal. My chances of having a child for myself are now taken away. You know, being present with all of that, having the doulas there with me at the visit, someone there to advocate for me so I didn't have to do it myself was so important. Having a place to go to where I could be taken care of, I could be myself, I could mm-hmm. not, I don't know, to sleep, to hate it, to have as many apples as I wanted, you know, for a week after while I was kind of waiting for that recovery was really important. And then, you know, something for me at that time that was really important is, you know, I've always had a challenging relationship with my parents. And during that time, I didn't feel seen and heard by my mother and father. And so I had to make a boundary. And that boundary was putting up a no. And it was really interesting because everyone kept saying to me, oh, you're going to be wanting support and you're going to be wanting your mom and, you know, you're going to want that there. And I was a little like, yeah, that's not the dynamic that I have with them isn't the dynamic I want and doesn't support my healing. You know, and I want anyone listening right now to know I've got a great relationship right with them right now, and we've got great communication, but you know, I have to make a lot of boundaries to make it work. And so that was the start of it. It was learning where the yeses were, learning where the noes were. Also, all of my doctors that I had, I interviewed them and I asked them all the same question. After finding out, you know, what college they went to, what their specialty was, I asked all of them the same thing. Why did you choose this? What was your reason for getting into oncology or wanting to help people with cancer? And that answer led me to the right people. And it wasn't, you know, and some of the people I chose were not the, like, you know, the top three in Los Angeles that everyone's like, go see. It was like, oh, no. Some of the people I chose were the brand new people who I knew got into this for a reason that really connected with me. And I knew they were going to have the time to listen to me and to what I had to say.
So what was the right answer?
I can see it right now with my oncologist. He was like, you know, it was inside of me. I felt it inside of me, inside of my heart, that this is what I wanted to do. And it was something that I knew would come through my hands. And I was like, you're my guy.
My MBLX Breakdown is brought to you by BetterHelp.
Boy, have there been so many times in my life when I have been so grateful to be in therapy. Times when I've felt depressed, when I've struggled with relationships, when I've had trouble sleeping or having nightmares, or I've felt that my goals are not clear. BetterHelp offers online professional counselors who can listen and help you start working through some of this. BetterHelp assesses your needs and matches you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating with them in less than 48 hours. This is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. This is the real deal. It's professional counseling that is done completely securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime. You can send a message to your counselor. You get timely and thoughtful responses, and you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. You never have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room like you do with traditional therapy. BetterHelp facilitates great therapeutic matches. They are so committed to that they make it easy and free to change counselors if you need to. That is so incredibly important. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is also available. So many people have been using BetterHelp. They're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. If you've never tried therapy, now's the time.
Our listeners get 10% off their first month of online therapy at betterhelp.com/break. Visit betterhelp.com/break and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced BetterHelp professional. There's no shame in asking for help. This episode of My and Bialik's Breakdown is brought to you by Helix Sleep.
Yeah, it is. Best sleep I think I've ever had in my life. My boys got Helix mattresses first, and I was like, I'm fine. I don't need one. And I sat on that mattress, and the three of us were like, this is an amazing mattress. It's very special.
Let's just admit that when your boys weren't there, you would sleep in their beds and not tell them.
That's how much I love the mattress. Jonathan, you're not supposed to say that. What if they're listening? Helix Sleep has this quiz that it just takes a couple minutes to complete, and it matches your body type and your sleep preferences to what is the perfect mattress for you. I mean, why would you buy a mattress that was made for someone else? With Helix, you get a mattress that you know is perfect for the way you sleep. Everybody is unique. Helix knows that. They have different mattresses, models that you can choose from. There's soft, there's medium, there's firm. There's mattresses that are great for cooling you down if you're a hot sleeper. And there's even a Helix Plus mattress for plus size sleepers. So if you're looking for a mattress, take the quiz. You order the mattress that you're matched to. It comes right to your door. It's shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to a mattress store again.
Helix is awesome, but you don't need to take our word for it. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress of 2020 by GQ and Wired magazine. Just go to helixsleep.com/breakdown. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz. They'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up if you don't love it, but you will.
Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for all of our listeners at helixsleep.com/breakdown. That's helixsleep.com/breakdown for up to $200 off and 2 free pillows.
This episode is brought to you by Hint Water. Mayim, how much water do you drink?
Not enough.
Well, that's a big problem because you're supposed to consume 64 ounces of water a day. That's 8 8-ounce glasses. For most people, that is not easy to do because water, you know, a lot of water is not very tasty. It's kind of boring.
Well, and not drinking enough water, it affects your mental health. It affects your brain's ability to actually function well. You need to stay hydrated. It can make you fatigued, grumpy. A lot of things people don't know happen when you get dehydrated. That's why we love Hint Water, because it tastes really good, which makes it easy to consume those 64 ounces of water. Hint infuses pure water with fruit essences to create surprisingly accurate fruit flavors. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. It's available in more than 25 flavors. I didn't even know there were 25 flavors. It's water with a touch of true fruit flavor. Jonathan, there are so many flavors. My favorite is the two things that I like most together, besides you and me, blueberry and lemon. It's one flavor, blueberry lemon.
It's amazing, but watermelon's way better.
Says you. You can find Hint Water at retail stores across the U.S., or, this is the best part, you can have it delivered directly to your door when you order on hintwater.com. Get a free case, that's 12 16-ounce bottles, do the math as to how long that'll get you, when you buy 2 cases of Hint Water. Shipping is free, enter the code BREAK at checkout. hintwater.com. So shifting a little bit from kind of your journey to our journey, my first child, who Miles, who's now 15, he was supposed to be born at home. I had gestational diabetes, mm-hmm. and I ended up doing a non-emergency transport at 9 centimeters, which is just about as fun as it sounds. And he was born otherwise, you know, without any pain medication, and he was born at a hospital. he was put into the NICU for 4 days, which is literally, you know, a first parent's nightmare. That's literally the worst fear, is that your child will be, you know, for some reason. And indeed, I had that child who was there for 4 days and literally was released. There was absolutely nothing wrong with him. You know, he had a low heart rate, like so does his father. And because I had diabetes, that's a thing. And they're concerned, whatever. He was tired. I said, well, he just got born. I thought that was normal. And it is a very exhausting process.
It's very tiring.
For some more than others. Anyway, I was 35 pounds over my normal weight when I got pregnant. So I had a lot of weight to lose. And also, like, even though I was a home birth person and I was a breastfeeding person and I was a safe bed sharing person, there was a lot about me that hadn't really, like, all of my weirdness hadn't come out. All of my holistic, you know, energy loving hippiness hadn't all come out. And I remember that when we started preparing and working together for my second birth, I think you were the first person who said, you have birth trauma. And people had said to me, like, oh, that's a really, like, you know, my first labor was 3 days on and off, and I did what's called a natural induction, which, you know, is trying to avoid a C-section with a baby that your backup OB wants out of your body. And there was a lot of fear and a lot of, well, some women don't just know how to go into labor, you know, they need to be helped, you know. Anyway, it was not a great experience, but, you know, I felt like everybody's got a crazy, you know, sometimes first, not everybody, but many people have a first-time experience that's not ideal, and was really just working on kind of the, you know, the shame. At that time, home birth was really, really very fringy. And so the notion that, like, I couldn't do it was very, it brought a lot of shame with it because there were so many I told you so's. And it was almost, you know, even from my parents, it was like, see? But at least he's healthy. It's like, well, after 4 days in the NICU, okay, at least he's healthy. So I remember when you said that, I didn't really know what that was. I think you might have been the first person to do energy work with me. And you put me on the table and you essentially did a session with me to try and help heal some of that trauma. Now, I'm a really big believer in you don't have to be able to explain it for it to work. Because the fact is, while there are certain things that, you know, it helps for you to be on board with energetically, my feeling is if it's going to work, it's going to work. Mm-hmm. And I think also you therefore were the first person who introduced me to this notion that this is not like a go, no-go system, this human existence thing. It's not like here's the thing that works and here's the thing that doesn't. There literally is no black and white, really, in our existence. Everything that we think is black and white, it is. It's an illusion. It's an illusion of control. So this gray, you know, that you really introduced me to, I had zero idea what you were doing with me when you put me on that table. And I remember a lot of other sessions. You know, I had a significant car accident, and I remember the work that you did, which was incredibly painful, but also really, really healing, and was so much also about being held, you know, by you and being in your presence. Talk a little bit about, let's just use this as an example, this like birth trauma thing. Mm-hmm. What is the work? And I know this is outside technically of midwifery, meaning these are things that you have as part of your toolbox because you're a healer of a lot of different modalities. But I don't want people to think like using a midwife means they put you on a table and you don't know what's happening.
No,
but
yeah.
But yeah, talk a little bit about, you know, for someone who's never heard of what this is, explain, and you don't have to remember specifically exactly, but explain what this kind of work is. And especially, you know, you can lean into, or I can, the science and the chemicals that are produced, you know, in the brain and in the body when we do this kind of work. So just kind of walk us through a little bit.
Right. So I think the first thing is a shifting of perspective, which is why I don't ever say I beat breast cancer. You know, it's not this like I failed or I succeeded. It's a journey. And it helped me solidify this perception of everything's a lesson. And my perception is not only is everything a lesson, but everything is there to teach us to shine light on the dark places, which goes back to the languaging of being seen and heard. You know, it's not let's see and hear all the good stuff. You know, it's let's see and hear, you know, having that curiosity. That's one layer to it. And there's another layer, which is everyone's body knows how to do this. Like, I'm not doing the healing to you. I never did the healing to you. Your body knows how to heal itself. Your body, Jonathan's body, everybody's body does. But what I feel is necessary is a relationship of someone else holding space, someone else seeing and hearing, somebody else being a witness, you know?
Okay, but sometimes when you sit with me, I remember like, my gums start feeling weird, or I'll get like an essence of a color, or like I'll feel really nauseous. Like,
yeah.
What are you doing? What are you doing, woman?
I'm holding space for your body to speak its language to you.
Why? How do you make it do that?
It's a somatic language. It's the language of see, hear, smell, touch, taste. You know, how do I make it do it? It's how our minds work. Have you ever done the lemon meditation?
No.
Do you want me to take you through a lemon meditation so you get a sense of this? Okay. And so everyone can do it also. I love doing this. This is okay.
Do I need to lay down on my meditation?
No, you can both sit. Jonathan, you can do this with us also.
Do I sit in Jonathan's lap for this part of the no? Okay.
So if anyone is watching me, I get really into it. So you'll see me with my eyes closed. All right. So closing your eyes and just taking a moment. So first thing you want to do is just connect to where you are. Feel your butt on the chair. It's that simple. Feel your butt on the couch or leaning back into something and taking a deep breath in. Just relaxing everything down. All right. Again, just feeling your butt sitting where it is. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to imagine that out of nowhere, if you extend out your hand, the most amazing lemon drops into your hand and you feel the weight of that lemon. And that lemon is beautiful yellow color. And as you touch it, it's got that silky, oily skin. And you bring it up to your nose and you inhale. Oh my God, that is the freshest lemon scent you have ever smelled. And that yellow color and that weight, you know, it is the juiciest lemon you've ever had. It is so silky smooth. And magically, a cutting board appears, and you put that lemon down on the cutting board, and magically, a knife appears, and you safely start to cut that lemon in half. And as you do, the juice starts to run out, and you smell that lemony smell. Oh my God, it is so fresh and juicy, and you're looking at that yellow color, and the juice is dripping down. Oh my God, it's literally the best. So you take half of that lemon, and you safely, with the knife, you cut it into a quarter and you go into that silky, smooth, oily skin, and it releases that fragrant yellow, that yellow smell, that lemon smell. Oh my God, it is so juicy. You're seeing the juice drip down. Oh my God, and that smell, that lemon smell. Wow. You put the knife down and you grab a quarter of that lemon. And as you touch it, you feel that oily, silky, smooth, lemony skin and that yellow color. The juice is dripping down. You start to bring it to your mouth. You can smell that lemon fragrance. The juice is just so right there. You open your mouth, you take a bite. And what is happening in your body right now?
That face right there.
Are you salivating?
Yes.
And now open up. Go ahead.
And it's puckery because I'm,
Now open up your eyes and look at your hand. Is there a lemon there?
No.
Right. It's the senses.
Right.
It's the see, the hear, the smell, the touch, the taste. It's the senses. And your body, your brain has gotten your body to viscerally react as though there is a lemon there.
I had a cut on my finger. It was stinging.
I literally was thinking about the paper cuts. I was thinking about potential paper cuts.
Why in my imagination is it hurting me?
Right. Right. So that's the body's wisdom. The body can do that. So what am I doing? I'm using the tool of acupuncture with the needles, with a medicine, with a study that's been around for years, and putting them in different places to move the chi. I am holding the feet at certain points. Some people call them the chakras, minor chakras, major chakras, right? I am sitting in trust in my own self, in my own body's wisdom. And your body is like, oh, there's some trust there. Oh, what does trust feel like? And it starts to find its own rhythm. And then your body would speak to you in the colors, in the shapes, in the smells. And your version of that, Mayim, is different than Jonathan's version than that.
Mine is nausea. Mine.
And sometimes the nausea's got to come up and out. They call it a healing response.
Can I pick another healing response?
You know, there's for some people, it's like there's a difference between a sick response. It's like, you know, you're feeling run down and you're feeling tired and now you got the sniffles and now you got the eyes and now you got the nausea, you know, 2 days in, now you're in bed. And then a healing response, they say, is the reversing of it backwards. It's all of a sudden you're doing great and all of a sudden you're doing the healing work and then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, it's like the sniffles and the nausea and it's like – and it moves through quickly, and then it's out of your body. It's like working it backwards.
Mayim, what is the science, or is there science around this idea of witnessing or and being seen?
Yeah. My experience with people who are healers is that not a lot has to be done for you to start feeling something, which is very disturbing for those of us who are, you know, programmed in zeros and ones and choose to live that way. It can feel like different things and it can feel disconcerting. You know, my younger one, Fred, is very, very, he's tuned into something that since he's really born that we felt he sees things other people don't see and he feels things other people don't feel. And sometimes when he's around people who are healers, it's like it's like he knows it. And so I feel like we all have that. We just have it to different degrees. So I'm going to answer your question, but what the reason I'm leading up to it this way is that this is one of those things that, you know, I always want to explain away, like, oh, it's just because I think they're going to do something. You know, it's because I think they're a healer that I'm going to feel something weird. Or I'm supposed to believe that Elizabeth's going to make me experience something, so that's why it's happening. But what we do know, and Elizabeth may have better references for this than I, what we do know is that no matter how technologically advanced we are, no matter how much we have progressed in terms of culture and science and literature, we are primates. And we are designed to be in the presence of others who support us. And that looks very different for Homo sapiens sapiens than for other primates, but also it doesn't look that different. And we have a culture and a language that has evolved so that, you know, Elizabeth sitting with me is, it's not the same thing as her grooming me. You know, which is what our primate cousins would do. There is activation of the mirror system, which the mirror neuron system, I think, is a really, really strong culprit here. And that would indicate also, and like this is taking it, you know, to a different level. That would indicate that, I don't mean to talk about you like you're not here, Elizabeth, but that would indicate that people like Elizabeth, historically, people with this genetic predisposition, you know, in some ways for an activation of that circuitry and the ability to see, you know, historically we called those people shamans and we called them guides and they were spiritual guides. And in every culture, there are people who serve this purpose and indigenous communities have these people still.
You're going to make me cry.
Oh, I didn't mean to make you cry.
No, but I'm being seen and heard, and I haven't heard anyone explain it that way about me. So, like, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you. Well, wow. And also, you know, Elizabeth also you know, introduced me to the person who was my healer for many years, who we lost this year. And that's very big loss for Elizabeth and for me and for so many people that this woman touched. This was a world that was opened for me, you know, by Elizabeth, which I don't feel like as a scientist, I have to explain it, because I do believe there are things we can't explain. And, you know, I'm a person of faith, so I have no problem with that.
Okay, but I'm going to make you try a little bit.
No, so...
I have some things to break down for the people who are listening and are like, okay, I hear all of this, and this sounds great, and there's a lot of amazing information in here. And personally, I have experiences that validate a lot of this stuff, but I'm going to play the, okay, let's break it down into a little bit more specifics. So... there is a, and I'm going to botch.
I said mirror neuron system. That's science.
Okay, let's dive a little bit deeper into that. And there's a quote that I'm going to 100% botch because I don't fully remember the science around this. But it's the idea that the system that is witnessed is different than the system without being witnessed.
By the way, I'm loving this because there's a lot that I know, like the work of Stephen Porges and the social nervous system, mirror neurons with a history of abuse in the family. But this idea of witnessing, if we look at the spiritual texts, I mean, you know, can I get a witness? It's all over the spiritual texts.
Literally, right? Can I get a witness?
It's literally there.
Yeah. So
I've had an experience of going to a practitioner who I won't put a label on them, healer or not healer, because I think some people have.
Okay, but it wasn't a dermatologist.
No, it was not
a urologist.
Technically, this person is trained as a traditional chiropractor, but she does not do any chiropractic. She does a system of network chiropractic, which is simple pushing of different parts of the body. I have had an experience where I've gone into that person and I have had releases, physical shifts. My body has moved without her touching me, her standing in the corner of the room.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to leave my personal experience out of this to sort of represent the
We think you're crazy, Jonathan. We don't want to talk about it anymore.
The somewhat skeptical listener. Exactly. If our body has a natural ability to heal and we are constantly fighting to be in a state of homeostasis, and so if we bend one way, our instinct and our drive as a human being is to try and get back upright, then the trauma, the experiences, the things that we're carrying around with us are impediments to that. And as Elizabeth said, our body has a natural ability to self-correct, but it either needs to be stimulated or the space needs to be held for that to happen. And what Elizabeth was mentioning about being in relation with someone else, often it's that person who comes in and anchors or witnesses or creates the space for us to feel safe, because otherwise we would just be...
Okay, so the experiment, first of all, yes, I believe you can have those shifts. I've experienced them. I mean, I think the three of us belong in a commune together with these experiences, but...
With the padded walls in the commune.
Padded walls in the commune. The experiment to do, like from a scientific perspective, is you have to create a room, and you have to do this with several thousand people where they don't know if the person's in the room or not. And you have a placebo group, and there's a wall or partition or some false double mirror situation where you would have to see if it could work if the person didn't know that the person's there. Go ahead.
No. So this is the new work of Stephen Porges, right? Do you know about the social nervous system?
No. I mean, go ahead. I know about the mirror neurons. Like, I know other
This is all the new work. This is all the new exciting stuff. So the social nervous system, because we're social animals, right? You know, it's not just the sympathetic, parasympathetic, but also the social nervous system. So I think it's from the hippocampus.
It's the limbic system.
The limbic system. Thank you. So where does that go to? It goes to the eyes. It goes to the mouth. It goes to the ears. Oh, isn't that interesting? It goes to the senses, right? Mm-hmm. It goes to the smile. So, right? And then it goes down into the heart, goes down into the stomach. What do we say all the time? We're always saying, oh, the gut instinct. It doesn't feel right in my gut. Coincidentally, it's the nervous system, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, my heart rate. Oh, it's just palpitating. Coincidentally, it's the nervous system. So I don't think it would work if you were walled off because of a relationship. So, Mayim, how are you today? Mayim, how are you doing today? Right? Mm-hmm. You're sensing the smile, okay, the social.
So then in that sense, so then the answer to Jonathan's question is, yes, it is possible that for someone to know they are being observed, even from a distance, to know they are being held, stimulates in them a different set of chemicals that are then going to facilitate a cascade if that person is in a place to be open to that cascade. So that's what the non-touch observation is. Now, people also do energy sessions by phone, by Zoom. I'm not going to say it can't be done, but it's a different kind of work than is done when someone's in the room. In addition, there are pheromones, you know, there are invisible chemicals, there are ways that we sense, that we have a proprioceptive sense also of mm-hmm. people around us. When I first met Vera and she was going to do energy work on me, I had very little idea of what was about to happen. I mean, I think for five sessions, she didn't put her hands on me. She said I wouldn't let her. And I was like, I don't know what this lady's talking about. I had zero idea because my ability to access what it felt like to meet a strange person and have to lay on a table, I was completely cut off from even having that knowledge. So once I started to work with her, I started to understand what she meant. And this can go, you know, I also worked with a fantastic woman who also passed away this past year, who, I mean, she was the most detailed scientific explaining human being about things that otherwise people would say were not scientific. She had a whole thing about the different levels of energy rings around you and like the different penetrative levels that you could go. And this was just like around everybody's body. But as she talked about it, I remembered the work I did with Vera. I remembered the work I've done with Elizabeth. That is, that notion of energy, that does exist.
So now you explain the energy of chakras to us to validate for all the entire scientific community?
I'm happy to do that. I don't know if this episode is the time to do that. You want to know right now? I'll tell you later, and then we'll do an episode about it. But I mean, honestly, it's for me as a scientist much easier to explain chakras than even this. And I feel like I got a little bit close here. So chakras is like, it's like a walk in the park. All the meridians, easy peasy, blood flow.
That will be episode 657.
Mind Bialik's Breakdown is brought to you by Third Love.
What's Third Love, you ask? It's the best bra that I've ever had. Totally serious right now. I was very skeptical because I've tried a lot of bras and I don't need to go into the details, but I'm a hard fit. Nobody's business, but I'm a hard fit.
You're terminally unique.
My breasts are also terminally unique. Third Love uses the measurements of millions of women to design bras with all-day comfort and support, and they stand behind their product. Essentially what MRIs do, where they take millions of brains and compile them into an algorithm to represent a brain, this is what these kind of measurements do, and that's how they create essentially what I think is the perfect bra. If you don't love it, exchanges and returns are free for 60 days. Every Third Love bra is made with signature memory foam cups. That's right, like a mattress in your bra. No slip straps. That is so true. That is like my favorite true thing about this. The straps stay put. It's extremely important. Also, they have a scratch-free band, which is important for those of us with sensitive skin. They make cups from size AA to I, including, and this is what's important, half cups, people, half cups. They make band sizes 30 to 48. You take a little quiz. It's called the Fitting Room Quiz. It's fun. It's easy. It's interactive. It focuses on specifics like size, breast shape, current fit issues, and personal style so that you know exactly what you should be wearing. Throughout the whole thing, fit stylists are available for one-on-one chats to answer any questions. I didn't have any questions. It was very clear what was going to happen. I was going to tell them everything they needed to know, and then I was going to be skeptical. But it is so much better than a traditional bra-fitting experience. You do it from the comfort and convenience of your home. The Fitting Room has helped 18 million women find their true bra size. I found mine, and you could be next. Let go of your bad bra. Your breasts deserve better, and so do you. Break up with that bra. fall in love with better bras, and also their undies are great too. From classic lace that actually feels soft to their number one rated, my favorite, 24/7 classic t-shirt bra, check out all the exclusive styles at thirdlove.com. And New Lounge by Third Love is made to wear everywhere. Their luxe mix and match styles are your unofficial uniform for anything you feel like doing. Work from home, lounging, running errands. Premium cotton fabrics in drapey, easy fit knits and wovens, available in sizes extra small through 3X, with all the quality and fit that Third Love is known for. I love this bra so much.
Third Love knows your one true fit is out there. So right now they're offering listeners of our podcast 20% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/breakdown now to find your perfect fitting bra. Get 20% off your first order. That's thirdlove.com/breakdown for 20% off today.
Can you say bra again?
Bra.
Mind Bialik's Breakdown is sponsored by ZipRecruiter.
If you're a business owner who's hiring, there are so many challenges that you have to deal with when finding the right person for the role. Sometimes there's just not enough people who have the skills or experience that you need. There are so many resumes, on the other hand. You can get so many resumes, but you don't have the time to sort through them. And as this happens to me and Jonathan, sometimes you need to like hire someone ASAP. Who's going to go through all those resumes? Sometimes you don't even know where to post this job so that you can reach the right people. Hiring can feel like trying to find a needle in a haystack. I mean, yeah, you can post it on some job board, but then you just have to hope that the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/break.
When you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 job sites with just one click. Then ZipRecruiter's matching technology finds the right people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. In fact, ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. It's no wonder that 2.3 million businesses have come to ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs.
So while other companies might overwhelm you with way too many options, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for, the needle in the haystack. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this web address, ZipRecruiter.com/break. Once again, remember, go to this unique place, so unique in so many ways, ZipRecruiter.com/break.
ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Mind Bialik's Breakdown is brought to you by Stamps.com.
I'm so excited about Stamps.com. Let's face it, taking trips to the post office is not how you want to spend your time. I recommend mailing and shipping online at Stamps.com. You can mail and ship anytime, anywhere, right from your computer. You can send letters. You can ship packages. You pay a lot less with discounted rates from USPS, that's United States Postal Service, UPS, and more. Stamps.com has saved businesses thousands of hours and tons of money. With Stamps.com, you get the service of the post office and UPS all in one place. And did I mention big discounts on mailing and shipping rates?
What would you do with all your extra time using Stamps.com?
I would work on my stamp collection, which I have from my childhood.
I'd ride my one wheel. Most importantly, Stamps.com is a must-have for any business. Whether you're a small business sending out invoices or an online seller shipping out orders or even a giant warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer to print out official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it.
I'm a big mailer. I love using mail. I do love stamps. There's something very gratifying about peeling them off. Since I was a child, I have loved stamps. Once your mail is ready, you schedule a pickup or you drop it off. It's that simple. You get discounts up to 40% off post office rates, up to 62% off UPS shipping rates. Not to mention, Stamps.com is a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters, which a lot of people think is the way to go. Stamps.com is a no-brainer. You save time, you save money. Nearly 1 million small businesses already use Stamps.com.
I use Stamps.com to ship out my hats.
Stamps.com, allows you to stop wasting time going to the post office. Go to stamps.com instead. There's no risk. And with our promo code breakdown, you get a special offer. It's a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. Talk to me about digital scales. I could talk about it all day. No long-term commitments or contracts. Go to stamps.com. Click on the microphone, which is at the top of the homepage. Type in breakdown. That's stamps.com, promo code breakdown.
Stamps.com. Promo code breakdown. Never go to the post office again.
Do you do or believe in past life regressions?
So back in the day, back before I received the calling, I used to sit with my pendulum and I used to do past life readings on people and chakra readings and all of that. There was a place called Audrey's Good Vibrations down in Venice. I don't know if you remember it.
I think so. With
Abbott Kinney. Flower essences, crystal, right. All the stuff that the millennials now are like, oh,
they
got my
love
flower
it.
Essences. I got my crystal in my bra. I was like, oh, I've been doing that since the 90s. I'm already past that, right? So I used to. Now, here's the thing where I came to personally with all of this, and I don't want to invalidate it for anybody. I got to the point where I was like, I got so much going on this lifetime. I got enough to deal with this lifetime. I can't worry about those past lives. Like, I believe everything's a lesson. You're learning lessons all the time. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to keep it really simple for myself. I'm going to learn the lessons this lifetime. They probably relate to past lives also, but I don't have time.
Jonathan, do you have experience with people in past life regressions? Is that a thing in your world that has existed? I'm not saying you. I'm saying you know a lot of people.
Yes, I've heard of these, and I know people who have dabbled in them, and I think that—
I mean, I've had them done to me. I'm not being shy about that information. I'm just curious your take on it.
My take is that the most important thing about a past life regression is how does it impact you in the current time period? And if it can shed more light on a pattern that you're experiencing now and a behavior that you have now, then great. If it's solely isolated to some story that may or may not be true based on that person's interpretation of it, then I don't see the value. But what does come up for me is like, if I was a peasant or if I was a street merchant in London in the 1600s, how is that related?
Your mustache would be out of control.
I would have, it would twirl. How does that relate to what I'm going through right now? And can I bring back something from that? We all are existing in some form of archetypical experience, and there are similarities, there are themes, there are patterns to our existence. And if that can be explained to me from some story, I'm into it.
I do want to say for myself, one thing that I have learned, I spent the better, I don't know, 10-ish years of 10, even more, probably 15 years of my spiritual journey, actually being in spiritual avoidance, you know, exploring all those past lives as a distraction, going to the drum circles, doing the ayahuasca. Mm. Like a lot of this was just like, I didn't know how much my younger selves had internalized trauma, and disassociation was one of my, you know, go-tos. And it was like, oh, great, we're gonna go meditate and, you know, go off here. So I do know for myself that it was it fed into my propensity of disassociation and leaving at first.
That's really fascinating you said that. I was actually talking about that with my therapist, my regular therapist, who knew that psychotherapy was the most boring thing about me in terms of the people that I see to try and heal me. But we were talking about this, and disassociation, we've actually talked about a little bit on this podcast. You know, that's a real science thing. It's a thing. That's where I, you know, just in my personal journey, feel like I come to all my out there stuff very honestly. You know, it is hard earned. You know, when I had, I mean, I do, I'm a person who has chronic pain, you know, I have trauma that's stored all sorts of, you know, nooks and crannies all about me, and it'll make itself known really at any given time, you know, in any different part of my body. And when this started happening more and more, and when walking and driving became difficult because of the pain I was having, I did a crazy thing. I went to a brand new Western doctor that I've never seen before. And I was just, I told him very little about me. I gave him my symptoms. I mean, I had like, my gums were bleeding, like all sorts of things.
And he said it's a past life issue.
No, he didn't. He was a lovely man, But he was exactly what I wanted. He was a 65-year-old white Jewish dude, you know, who went to medical school back east. And he was really lovely. I gave him all my symptoms. I didn't keep anything from him. I told him, I know I have a thyroid condition, you know, and I've had it, and here's this, that, the other. I told him I have a complicated psychiatric history. And this man did the workup of all workups. And by that, I mean, he tested me for things that I literally told no one I was being tested for. He tested me for cancer, leukemia. He tested me for, well, he couldn't figure out what was wrong with me because based on these symptoms, like nothing was sounding good. You know, he asked a bit about my life. I mean, he did a very good job. He did a very good workup. And I know that I'm in a very, you know, privileged place. And it's also devastating that you have to drop a couple thousand dollars to try and figure out what's wrong with you because most people live not having the ability to do that. So several thousand dollars of tests later, which were not covered by insurance because blah, 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 there was nothing wrong with me medically that he could tell. Yes, I have a thyroid condition. And that's literally all I needed to know. I needed him to confirm for me that this was not the path. The path was not to now go to a different specialist. The path was not to go to a gastrointestinal doctor. The path was not to go to a dermatologist. Like, that was not the path. The path was to know that what was wrong with me was that, I mean, what we call it is adrenal failure. It, you know, that's in, you know, in holistic circles, we call it, you know, it's workaholism is what it is. It's extreme stress and anxiety bearing down on every part of your body, and your body will just shout as loud as it can. And sometimes it'll get quiet and you'll think, oh, I figured it out, and then it'll come back. So that's sort of, you know, for me, entering the world and continuing to enter the world of going to, I see an allopathic doctor who, you know, takes care of all the Western things, but being able to say, there are things that happen in my body and in my mind that need a different kind of support. And I always felt I was born in the wrong time. I always felt I was living in the wrong time for all sorts of reasons, you know, because when I read Camus, I was like, I should have been a North African princess so that I could meet Camus. You know, I had all sorts of identification with the other, but that's more what it feels like when I've gotten, you know, to embrace energy work and especially to get to embrace this kind of healing stuff, you know, as a scientist. We may have to have Elizabeth back because we didn't even get to cord cutting. We didn't even get to cord cutting.
Well, I think before we let Elizabeth escape this conversation.
I don't want to go. We could do this for hours. I have questions for you, Mayim.
Elizabeth, why don't you tell people how to start to develop an intuition?
So I can only speak from my experience. Here's the thing from what I know to be true, Jonathan, is that when one is looking for an answer outside of themselves and the one thing that's going to make it happen, you tend not to find it because what I have learned is it's multi-layered. You know, it's like knowing what is true for you. And it's the same with any pregnant person who gives birth. Everything really does come back to birth for me. It's like this well-oiled clock or machine. It's like, you know, you get this little one circulating that gets the big one to go, that gets this other thing to, it's like it all starts to move together and it's not just one thing. And what had happened for me, I spent so many years like searching, you know, following Amma for a while, you know, doing the drum circle, the ayahuasca, the this, the that, like, and then all of a sudden what happened for me, I had it all along, but I thought it was going to look a certain way. That was my biggest failure, was thinking I know what it's supposed to look like. Because all the books said you're going to hear something or see something or like, you know, where's the technicolor? You know, where's the big Vegas arrow pointing? This is it. It didn't happen for me. It was much more subtle for me. And I think when I started to acknowledge that the somatic body was real, the body of see, hear, smell, touch, taste of the non-physical senses was real, I started to have a felt sense on the inside of that, as I said earlier, and then it started to come around me and I started to feel safe. I started to have a relationship with it, and then I started to learn what my language is and who I was as a unique human being. And for me, I am learning, I don't think I am psychic. I actually think I'm a big observer. And I see patterns. You know, you go back to numbers, and it's also for me nature. I'm seeing birth and death. I'm seeing beginning, you know, pre-beginning, middle, ends, and afters. I am constantly seeing patterns, and I'm watching where things will land within a nervous system. So where's the intuition in that? It's the trust that I have in being held and being in relationship with what that is for me. It's the trust in knowing I'm not in charge and there's something bigger holding me. And in that, I can trust that I might make a mistake and I'm still going to be held, so I can listen to it knowing it won't be perfect. So I think there's many layers to it for me.
I think that's beautifully said. And what I can say from being, you know, a person who literally was on the other side of this lady with no idea what she was doing or what we were, you know, really embarking on, I can say that Elizabeth also, she has led by example. So what are some of the things I would say that Elizabeth has indirectly taught me in order to find that instinct? I know you were asking her, but I'm taking it like you were asking me.
I'm always asking you, Mayim.
Finding a person who is a guide is one of, like, I don't see this as something I could have necessarily done alone. I think there are parts of it that I could have done alone, but having someone who is guiding you, I need to be told what to do. And I think a lot of people search for instinct the same way that they searched to feel like they knew what they were doing in the first place. So what Elizabeth has taught me is that I have to be open. I have to be open to not knowing and to trusting someone else, which is exactly why I have all the ailments that I have, is because I have a trust problem. But I would say that Elizabeth has taught me, I mean, she's led by example, pausing, breathing. I don't think I had a minute's quiet really in my life until she made me, you know, sit on the table and work on me. Like, finding those quiet places is when we get back to the natural state that we exist in, which is a human being and not a human doing. Elizabeth has also taught me to prioritize my healing and also be open to the places where I don't prioritize it, because it takes me a long time sometimes. And that's also part of my stubbornness is part of my journey too. So that's, I think, what I see as Elizabeth teaching me to have my instinct.
You know yourself well enough, Mayim, to know you need someone to tell you what to do,
right?
Sometimes to yes. find it.
Yeah.
You know, and in Chinese medicine, this one's always stayed with me, that yin-yang balance. It's like you have a vessel, you have a boundary to hold the water. If you have a vessel with no water in it, you just have a vessel, right? If you have water with no vessel, the water just goes everywhere. It's like that container, that being held, that boundary that the water comes up against to then move to another place that comes up. You know, it's that, and it's mm-hmm. that flow that starts to happen. You know, and it's different for everybody.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Oh,
that was
thank
really
you
nice.
For having me.
We should have her again. Cord cutting. Who doesn't want to hear about cord cutting? Thank you so much. What'd you think?
I think there's a lot of future episodes.
I think she needs her own podcast.
Instead of ask Mayim anything.
She makes me happy.
And instead of you might need help if, we'll do we might need more podcasts if people don't fully understand
the Akashic Records.
Somatic experience of the non-physical world.
What? That's not self-explanatory?
The energy of the nervous system.
Same.
Fasting before chemo. Building intuition. Energy healing. Holding space. The mirror neuron system. The social nervous system. A couple words I don't even know.
She knows a lot more. I think she speaks Sanskrit.
Everyone speaks Sanskrit that does that work. It's a prerequisite.
She's awesome. I also love that her journey is you know, she did. She went a very conventional route in life. Like, that was what she thought was going to be her life. And she started having dreams about babies.
She just went to become a midwife to satisfy the dreams so she would know what to do when the babies were dropped into her hands in the dreams. I mean, if that was the case, then I would go to flight school because I often have dreams that I'm flying.
That's really? What I hoped is that we made some of these concepts sound a little bit less crazy, because Elizabeth she's an intelligent woman. She is a scientifically minded woman. She's a woman who is a licensed midwife, who has a license. She has a birthing center. Like, she's entrusted with things. She's like a real person. And I think a lot of people feel that individuals who talk about these things are really fringy, maybe unreliable people, or, you know, people who like have to do that for a living. She's very serious about the work that she does, and she's very serious about the impact that it has. You know, she's very humble. She's very modest about it. She's a very serious energy worker. She has power. She's got power in her hands. She has power with her presence.
She's a very serious energy worker is something that not that many people have said. I just picture her taking her like little energy briefcase and going downtown Manhattan to...
She's made a career out of understanding the human body and the human nervous system, and in particular, the journey from, you know, the prenatal world to birth and beyond.
Here's what I'll say, and it connects to our episode with Eliza where we were talking about chronic pain. And Elizabeth was talking about capital T trauma and lowercase t trauma. Everyone goes through something in life, many things often that cause us to have shock, cause us to have big emotions, cause us to have lowercase trauma, and some of us have uppercase trauma. And without some witnessing, some processing, I'm not saying it has to be in any particular modality, but without working that through, that stuff doesn't go anywhere. And it just kind of gets stacked under everything else that we're doing.
Well, the idea is that some people have a set of coping mechanisms which help them move that trauma through their bodies in ways that they may not even think about.
And other people just absorb it, don't move it fully through,
correct,
hold on to it, and then build coping mechanisms around that, and you don't even...
Usually they just suffer, though. And, you know, they have unexplainable pain. I mean, I don't mean that like a bad thing. They have unexplainable pain. They can't sleep. They have all these ailments. They get diagnosed with all sorts of things, and nobody can figure it out. Often, though, I'd say more often than not, those people are living with trauma.
And also, what I'm suggesting is that it might not be chronic pain and sleep immediately. It might be, I have this thing.
That shit'll build.
That's what I'm talking about, is the continual and gradual process of trying to keep going forward in life.
Yes.
Keep standing up straight.
Oh, the body gets louder and louder. It's like an unruly toddler. Like, it'll start with like, mama, mama. And then it'll be like, okay, she's not responding. I'm going to tug at her skirt.
And then all of a sudden, all the kitchen cabinets are unpacked and the pots and pans are on the floor.
And the child is laying on the floor in the middle of Target and everyone's like, why don't you know how to parent?
Well, that pretty much sums up the episode.
That was the episode. No, super, super grateful for Elizabeth spending time with us. I mean, there are many other things I could talk to her about, namely...
Cord cutting. And placenta eating. We're going to post resources on bialikbreakdown.com.
Not for cord cutting and placenta eating.
But for all the other scientific terms that were discussed today, and we're going to try to bridge some of this.
It's older than the science that we consider old.
But it does feel like, in some ways, the fringes of Eastern philosophy and energy work and mindfulness, our current science is catching up or proving some of these facts.
Which makes you know, crotchety old hippies like you and me very annoyed.
I'm not annoyed. I'm happy that these things are being explained.
I'm happy and also annoyed because, like,
previously my parents were like, what the heck are you talking about? And now I'm like, look, the science.
Now they're like, we still hate it, but at least we know it's true.
There's a big shift in the last 25 years.
I find tremendous legitimacy in Eastern traditions and Eastern medicine. And I did not need, look, I know for FDA reasons, you need certain things proven for it to move into different phases, blah, blah. But like, I've had psychiatrists say to me, have you tried St. John's wort? Which is a, you know, something that 15 years ago, people would have been like, that's poppycock. Is that a word? I just became John Mulaney.
Not a word that we use.
15 years ago, 50 years ago, like St. John's wort, this is now a regular psychiatrist, like an MD.
And soon he'll be telling you, go out and cut those cords from your last relationship because they're blocking your...
So this is a subject for another episode. A lot of this is language. You know, when someone, if a therapist says to you, forget about him, move on, he's just not that into you, he's not available, the holistic community says, let's do a cord cutting ceremony. To be continued.
Everything is, okay, yeah, to be continued.
Everything's relative, is what Jonathan was about to say. From my energetic breakdown to the one I hope you never have, we'll see you next time.
It's my Bialix breakdown. She's gonna break it down for you. She's got a neuroscience PhD or two. One fiction, one fiction. And now she's gonna break